The rich and powerful want us to think the economy is a line on a stock market ticker. That's wrong. The economy is powered by us. It's what we create, what we buy, what we need. President Biden has proposed bold public investments in jobs and families, but more is needed. We need housing, healthcare, caregiving, action on the climate crisis, and millions of good-paying jobs. This is our moment to finally unlock prosperity for all of us. For more information, go to prosperus.org. That's prosperus.org.
New hot and iced sunrise batch coffee from Dunkin'. A bright and balanced, full-bodied blend brewed so you can get summering from sunrise to sunset. And even after that, because that's when you can show off those string lights you hung in the backyard. Or rehung. Enjoy a medium, hotter iced sunrise batch coffee for $2. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast.
Jordan Bell. Jordan Belfort, stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the Molly and I think it's be my third. Jordan Belfort, Jordan Belfort. I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Jordan Belfort, I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Ken and Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the the AT&T Pebble Beach Classic. I don't even know what it's called. My brain is so fried right now after the Super Bowl, and then fucking having to wake up at 4:30 in the morning to go to work the next day. They should really make the day after the Super Bowl a holiday, because this shit fucking sucks. Anyways, I am here with my man, Tyler Tambolin. Tyler, how are you this week, my friend?
I'm good, man. That might be the best intro ever, Kenny, where you just cut it right off and just give the world your thoughts on how life's treating you, man. I'm feeling all right, man. I'm a little hungover myself. I actually enjoyed the evening, though. It was a good one. You know, before we get started, got to remind everyone, this podcast is brought to you, presented and sponsored by rotogrinders.com. You can head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen, get yourself 10 bucks off the first month. Had a lot of folks reach out to me, get set up on that. So I appreciate you liking the content. Give me some more feedback if you got some over there. But what a day, Kenny. Like you said, I agree, man. You gotta be a holiday after the Super Bowl. Waste management. I don't know. Maybe it was because I wasn't there this year, but I still was enjoying it from home, and I maybe got more intoxicated than I did when I was there the last year. So I don't know. This was a crazy one for me. I'm excited to talk about the results. You know, we had a lot of crazy shit happen. Spieth, Koepka, Xander down the stretch, Xander Finau. You know, there's a couple different things going on. And then DJ is a theme of the week, because we'll get to that later, but he also happened to be winning to start the day off yesterday over in Saudi Arabia. So what did you think of the week, and how was it for you?
Yeah, the Bash brothers getting it done. I guess they're not really brothers anymore. I don't even know if they're friends, but I mean, they get it done this week with DJ and Koepka. Koepka was, it was pretty impressive. I guess the main thing that stuck out to me about Koepka's win was his interview afterwards. You know, I've always given Koepka a little bit of a hard time, just because I know he's good, and I know, you know, he's won all those majors, but to like talk the shit that he does and the attitude he has, to me, it just doesn't feel like he's, I mean, it's weird saying this about a guy who's won four majors, but at least recently, in the last couple of years, you know, when he hasn't had the major win, he's still been talking that shit. And just, you know, that type of thing sort of rubbed me the wrong way. I like shit talkers, don't get me wrong, but I like it when you back it up. And he really just hasn't, you know, for the last couple of years, I guess 18 months or whatever. Now, in his post-round interview, he talks about, you know, how he was in a dark place and, you know, the injuries really got to him. And he said he was humbled. And I thought, wow, I mean, maybe it's a change of pace. Now, if he goes out and starts winning every week and winning majors again, yeah, hey, talk your shit, brother. Do your thing. I don't mind. But I like the way that he presented himself afterwards. because he knew that his game wasn't where it was supposed to be, especially for the type of talent he was. And to get this win was, you know, probably pretty emotional for him, which it seemed like for him. You know, just the way he was talking, the way he was acting. You know, Xander just couldn't get the job done once again. It's pretty bad for him. I had a ticket on him on, you know, at 11 to 1. I actually cashed out on Saturday night at about 5.5 to 1. So I was really glad I did that. You know, definitely saved the week. And then, of course, we got to talk about Spieth. Jordan, you know, I've been bashing him for years now. And it's not, I don't think it's been unwarranted. And he's been straight butt cheeks for like, you know, 3 years. He's been horrible. So, I mean, I have no problem saying that when I talk shit about him and I said that his game was off and he was horrible, that, I mean, I wasn't fucking lying. Now, that doesn't mean that when he plays well, it's not a great thing to watch. And it's not, and it's exceptional for the game. I mean, the amount of buzz that came around during his round on Saturday was pretty fucking unbelievable. And it made that round so much fun to watch. I mean, a good Jordan Spieth is good for the game. I think the one thing I noticed from him, especially on Saturday, is he was enjoying the game. I always talked about in the past how you hadn't seen him smile. You don't see him smile on the course anymore. It doesn't look like he's having any fun. Well, it looked like he was having some fun. And when you shoot 61, you're going to have fun. And you know, the comeback, and even on Sunday, he didn't play his best, but still just one over, was still in the mix until, you know, close to the end. I think he was like a stroke back with still five holes left to play. He was still in it. He just couldn't hit a fairway. But the thing is, that's his game. You know, I mean, the thing about his approach game was so good that, you know, even when he was in his prime, the thing about him, the reason why I thought that his game was suffering and I didn't know if he was going to be able to come back was because he lost mentally, like, you know, mentally his joy for the game, mentally, like, trying to get into the game. And I think that was what put him above everybody else back in the day in his prime. He's like 27 years old, but like when he was winning all the time, the thing about it back then was, you know, his mechanics, his swing, his off the tee game wasn't really that great back then either. You know what I'm saying? The thing that stood out for him was that mental capacity to make the clutch shot at the clutch time. That's why he was so fucking good back then. And you saw glimpses of that on Saturday, and you saw the fun that he had, because when you lose the mental side of your game, you can lose your game forever. We've seen it before. Chip Beck, Ian Baker Finch, David Duval. I mean, Baker Finch was a freaking major winner, and then he lost the mental capacity to play, had the yips, and just quit the game. You know, I mean, it's not like it's never happened before. It happens pretty often in the game of golf, and that's why I was so worried about Jordan Spieth. And I didn't know if he could really come back, because that was his game. You know, he wasn't the longest off the tee. He wasn't the best ball striker there. Short game and putting, he was the best. But I mean, you need to get the ball to the green first. And the thing is, he just made so many clutch shots back then. And the way he went and played the game, it felt like that, you know, when you looked at him, he's like, you know, I can do this. I can make par from here. I can chip this in. And that's the way he thought. And he did it quite often. So it was really nice to see him back, because he's good for the game. I mean, the juice that was buzzing around him, really, really nice. So I'm hoping this is a prelude, this maybe him getting back, you know, and you know, he's always fun to watch. What'd you think?
Yeah, there was no doubt about that, man. The pep in his step was what I saw. We just talked a couple weeks back about the Tiger doc and sort of the joke of, it was right after Kevin Na won, and we said, you know, that they showed him walk it in after Kevin Na did, and how Tiger started having fun with the game again. And then, what do you know, sort of his little comeback thing. And this was the feels on Saturday for me and for most, I believe, with the Spieth stuff out there. It's better when he's playing well. We want these guys to play, whether you're a big fan or not, or you hated on him in the past or not. It's exciting when he's back in the game and he's having a day like that. I know it didn't translate on Sunday, but he's definitely got to take something away from that with the confidence. I had a good laugh, Kenny, at some of the jokes that were going around out there. Like, did you see DJ hit that guy in the back over in Saudi? That was, and someone posted that, yeah, I forget who it was. They're like, so remember when he hit it over top and just buried Jordan in that playoff? And then they're, yeah, like, so this is when he broke Jordan, and then this is when he fixed him. He hits the guy in the back with the, yeah, guy.
Know, all the of guy. Sudden, you know, I almost killed a guy doing, like, before you go, I almost killed a guy doing that one time. I hit a worm burner three wood. literally like, you know, like worm burner, slice into the next fairway, bounced one time and hit this guy straight in the back, like straight in the back. And the dude just looked back and like, he was a straight up monster. He like looked back at me. He was like, your ball's right here. And just walked away. Like this shit had to avert because the thing was going like 800 miles per hour. Anyways, go ahead.
No, it's all good. I think it's funny. Like it's just, I just thought those things were funny. There were a lot of different things were out there about it. It made some light of it. But I think at the same time, like you said, it's better when he's back. You like seeing him playing well. I loved it. I thought it was great. Didn't really want to pile in on him on Sunday showdown. That was my big thing. So I avoided that. But you know, him and Xander,
yeah, I didn't play him.
This is, I mean, I saw why you cashed out. I remember you retweeted the stat there and quote tweeted. It was 0-3 on the 54 hole leads, now 0-4. And it's tough, man. And mind you, just to keep the joke running, but Tony Finau, bogey on 16, 17 overseas to come second.
To finish in second. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah. And the thing about Xander, that's 8 runner ups since his last win. Are they like Tony and Xander? They're starting to look like the same person, really.
It is what it is. I mean, like I said, when you're printing checks in second place all the time, I relate it back as much as I can, you know, to keep this podcast on task with daily fantasy and the thoughts of, you know, it happens a lot to, you know, a lot of buddies I play with, or I don't play with them, but they play, we talk about it and we're talking higher level here. They're saying, you know, the same thing. There's the mental part of the game is a huge factor, right? The minute you think you can never get back there, you suck, you'll never win a tournament again, all that, it's what ends up happening. And like you said, the Brooks interview, just to tie it all back, the Brooks interview was, you know, a little bit telling. He mentioned it twice. He dropped the fact that he was in a dark mental place. Those things got to get to him, right? They still see social media. They still see all these things. It's, you know, it's a hard thing. It's a hard gig out there for them. I can't speak for them. I don't play professional golf. I can just tell you where I can relate to it. And it's, you see all these things happening and guys doing things around you. He saw everyone talking about the DJ thing, the coach thing. That's kind of why I bet him last week too, was I said, I know he's seeing this stuff. I know that he's not there and he missed 3 cuts, but when's the last time he missed 3 cuts? So at least I should get a weekend sweat. And then what if the stuff, the news of the Claude Harmon coach that leaving, you know, left him at the Masters and then DJ goes on to win it. Like all these things got to be bothering him just a little bit. So to see him put it all together was really nice. And like I said, that interview was a lot less cocky. I like cocky Brooks, but I'm like you, I like seeing a sort of the human side of as well. So that was good.
It seemed real, you know, I mean, a lot of that boisterous, you know, the pumping of the chest, you know, type deal that he's been doing.
I don't practice and all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems sort of not real. You know, it just seemed like he was posing as this type of golfer, especially because his game wasn't backing it up. And that's the issue that I've had with Brooks. And so it was nice seeing that from him. And now if he goes about and wins some more tournaments, bring back fucking cocky, arrogant Brooks. That's fine with me. Exactly. Just show some game first. And show some game first. And, you know, that's what he did. And good for you, hitting a 50-1 ticket that you bet on the pod last week in our betting segment. So that was solid. For me personally, decent week DFS-wise. 4-for-4, Cascade Cornerstones, hooray, hurrah, huzzah. It finally happened. The only issue is the other two guys I rostered missed a cut. So I did not win in cash, but my GPPs were really good. I basically lost like $10. And to lose $10 when I don't win in cash, with the way I do my bankroll system with 45% cash, with one lineup and then, you know, 55% GBPs, that's a good week, you know, just to be able to almost break even, doing it that way. So it was solid. I had a couple of top 100 lineups in large field GPPs that, you know, it sort of sucked. Sunday killed me a little bit because of course I had Xander and Scheffler, in most of those lineups. And I Scheffler was going to be a fade for me, but then I saw that, you know, he's going to be like 6% owned. And I was like, oh, well, shit, I got to play him. You know, just because, you know, when you see somebody with that much talent and that low ownership on Wednesday, when you look at the ownership projections, I was like, well, I gotta go against my word and play him on that one. So I did. And it paid off a little bit until Sunday. Betting wise, solid again. I mean, ever since betting was legalized in Virginia 3 weeks ago, I have been on a nice little run. I had Xander cashed out. Xander Saturday night at about 5.5-1 on a $50 bet. So that was like $300. Then I had a drunk ass 4-person parlay that I made that I didn't even remember making. Those are the best bets to win when you're just hammering. You're like, oh, let me put this bet in. Let me put this bet in. Yeah. And then, like, I didn't even know that I won. And I looked at my DraftKings account. I was like, why do I have so much more money in my DraftKings account right now? What happened? And so then I checked, and I won this, like, crazy parlay on Saturday, four-way. I hit. And then on the back nine, I peppered Brooks. I put a little bit on him at 20-1, put a little bit on him at 18-1, and put a little bit on him at 8-1. As the back nine kept progressing. So that went well. And then, of course, I hit the Super Bowl bet. Like I said last week, I had the Bucs minus -3. It didn't happen the way I said, where it was going to be a close game and the Chiefs are going to win. But I still, Bucs minus -3, that paid off too. So it was a good week. Would have been better if Norlander finished top 20. He finished 22nd. I also had Nick Hardy top 40. He finished 42nd. So that was a little bit painful. Could have been a huge week if those hit. But, man, the betting's going well. And it's going to keep on going, and I feel good about it, especially a lot of the live bets and stuff like that. It just makes it so much easier to bet now where it's legal top 40 bets. You get the better numbers out there than going with off-season books. So solid week, winning week overall. So, again, I mean, just because of the betting, DFS was a little bit better this week, especially the cash game cornerstones and my GPPs. How'd you do? I know you probably did pretty well with that Koepka 50-1 bet, right?
Yeah, the Koepka ticket made the week for sure. I had a good week otherwise in DFS, not in PGA though. PGA was rough. I didn't play Xander by the end of the week. I just said, forget it. If I've got Rom, Rory, JT, everybody up here, I just can't. So I just made that decision. That didn't work out very well from that side. I had lots of Brooks, Scheffler, no Spieth or anything like that. So wasn't really high on Louis. I missed the boat on a few of those guys. So that didn't help, but really good couple solid NBA days. And then I won a MMA GPP on Saturday night and then hit those bets on Sunday. Boy hit a crazy football bet though.
You've been crushing like the all non-golf.
Anything to do that's not PGA.
You've been crushing the all non-golf. Yeah, you've been crushing. What'd you win, like LPGA, NASCAR, and now MMA? You're just like the all-around player. You're like Xander, but you win. You know what I'm saying? You're like the all-around dude. That's great.
In PGA, it's like Xander or Fina. Go ahead. I'm always getting right there. Oh, I was just going to say, the Super Bowl bets too. You just talked about some. I was hard on the under. So I got the first half under by half a point. That was a little bit scary. Then I got the game under. Overall, so that was my biggest bet. So I was loving that. When you get two teams like that with all those names on paper, everyone just loves the over, right? There's no way that there's just not going to be fireworks, they say. And then it's the other way around. They got there for a reason. They both have some defensive players that can do their job. And sure enough, it came out that way. I was not expecting it, like you said, to go down, but that's why I didn't want to pick a side, because it's Brady versus Mahomes. That to me is impossible to pick on paper. Like, it's just so hard to siphon through. My buddy hit a huge bet. Shout out to my boy Dob, $11. On Brooks Koepka. He had a little less than most. He had a 40-1, but then he put it together with the Gronk first touchdown, which was like 17-1. And he hit that thing. And we were just pumped to see that happen to start the game off. So yeah, shout out to him. It was a big bet, paid like over $7,500. So, and then he had Brooks, he had Brooks standalone. He wasn't just going to let it go to waste, but he tried to parlay it up with something else just to make it happen. So huge on him. And overall, great week, man. I had a fantastic week. So I'm excited. And now we get Pebble Beach. More good GPPs to give back some of that alt sport money.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let's before we get into Pebble, let's talk about this Listener League lineup. The winner was Triple Threat. Another Gups Corner member takes it down. They've been running this shit here lately. So his lineup consists of Justin Thomas. He was 22.4% owned, finished 13th, still at 100.5 points. And condolences to Justin Thomas. And of course, his Sunday wasn't that great because his grandfather passed away. So that must have been really, really tough for him to go out. I mean, it shows the stones he has to go out. And I mean, if that happened to me, I probably wouldn't have been. I would have just withdrew. Yeah. Kudos to him. He had Usti, who finished 11th at 93.5 points. He was 3.87% owned. He had Brooksy, 9% owned. 146.5 points. Corey Connors, another guy that we liked last week, about 17% owned, finished in 17th, 95 points. Brendan Steele, 11% owned, finished in 30th with 77 points. And he had K.H. Lee. Yeah. That was the one that put him over the edge, the chunky Korean, who's a masterful karaoke singer. If you ever get me drunk enough, I will do some karaoke. New Edition. That's my shit. I Can't Stand the Rain. You should hear it sometime. And K.H. Lee, it's karaoke's huge in Korea. Like, if you go, they actually have these things called karaoke rooms where you go with like a whole bunch of your friends, and it's in like a room, and you get served booze and food and whatever, and you just wail on some crazy karaoke. I've been to a few of those when I was in Korea. But Chunky Casely finished in second, 0.5% owned, 116 points. What'd you think?
Yeah, incredible. Got your guy, Cage Lee, down there, and the Canadian, Corey Connors. We've had this battle before back and forth, right? So we liked Connors, Koepka, Thomas. Those are guys I was in on. I wasn't as high on Louis Steele or Cage Lee, but shout out to him. And we just talked about this last week about guys blowing out the field in this Lister League, and here's another almost 40-point victory. So good on Triple Threat. Get the job done there, and we'll see him in the three-man this week.
All right, so let's get to this week. The PGA Tour goes to California again for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, but there's no Pro-Am. It's just AT&T Pebble Beach, which is great because you're not going to have 6 hours. This is one of like the worst TV watching golf tournaments ever. So without the amateurs out there, you won't have the 6.5 hour rounds. You won't have the cutoff to Larry, the cable guy, instead of watching like someone actually trying to hit a shot. So that's going to be very, very nice. Also with the no Pro-Am, they're actually only going to go to two courses this year. It's going to be at Pebble Beach and it's going to be at Spyglass. No Monterey Peninsula Shore course this year. It should make the scores a little bit worse than usual. They're going to play Pebble three times. Now, of course, this is sort of weather dependent because Pebble can get taken over if there is no wind or anything. You know, it's a short course. These guys are pros and they can do their thing. But if there's any type of wind, even if it's mediocre, I mean, I would think that the scores will be a little bit worse than what we've seen in this event the last few years. So let's get to the courses. Pebble Beach Golf Links is around a 6,900 yardish. Par 72 with four par threes and four par fives. Two of the par fives are reachable by all golfers. One won't be reachable by any. That's going to be the 14th. It's going to be tough. Of course, it depends on the wind. And one is reachable for the long hitters. That's going to be the 18th. The course hugs the coastline, you know, great views, beautiful course, but also brutal conditions if the wind picks up. Off the tee, golfers see fairways that are above average in size with bunkers, garden, landing zones. You will see a lot of less to driver. Here, I think 70% of all the fairways have been hit in this event for the last decade plus or so. So you're going to see a lot of less to driver on this course. Now, if golfers miss wildly off the tee, you know, OB comes into play since nearly half of the holes sit along the ocean side of the Pacific Ocean. On approach shots, golfers are going to see tiny, tiny greens with just a bit of undulation slope. The greens aren't usually crazy fast here, and I expect this meter to be around 10.5 to 11. It's going to be, POA greens, a lot of bunkers, a lot of false fronts surrounding the greens. So that's what the golfers have to deal with there. Spyglass, around 7,000-yard par 72, four par threes, four par fives. All the par fives should be reachable in two by most golfers. Plus 17, like this past week. I love this. When one of the last couple of holes is a drivable par three, you can see some crazy stuff like we saw from Koepka this past week. 17 is a reachable par four. This is the most, I would say this is probably the most difficult course out of the three. Even unless the wind really, really picks up, I would expect this to play a little bit more difficult than Pebble. The first five holes here are played among the coastal sand dunes, but after the fifth hole, the course moves more inland and is played within the Del Monte Forest. That's why I'd say if the wind does pick up a bunch, Pebble could play harder. But in normal conditions, I think this is a more difficult course. With many more trees protecting this course, the wind could be less of a factor than Pebble Beach. Off the tee, golfers see average-sized fairways with just a few fairway bunkers to deal with. If golfers are wild, they're going to have to deal with a lot of trees and a lot of water. On approach shots, golfers are going to see larger greens, but it's going to have a lot more slope and a lot more undulation. What are you looking for in golfers this week, Tambo?
Yeah, I'm looking at ball strikers, Kenny. Just what you said, man. Everything just the second shot, tee to green, overall game. I think a couple things that stand out. It could be a little bit tougher, right? We the course rotation got swapped down. No Monterey Peninsula, so that was typically the easier course. So you mentioned this, but it's out. So I think the score could be a little bit, less than what we're used to seeing. And then I also think, or higher scoring, I should say. And then also, I think, I was going to say something else, but yeah, I think it's going to be a spot where we can take advantage of some of what we've seen lately, right? I know there's a lot of course history here as well, but that'll make some decisions for guys like Phil Mickelson, Jason Day, even Jordan Spieth, if we go back to the well. So I think that'll be brought into consideration. But With the way it's set up, and the weather will be a factor. We'll have to wait on that and see. That changes some things. You mentioned the wind earlier, but that allows things like in the afternoon, some of those par fives become more reachable for more guys in the field. And so things like that. So overall, man, just, you know, ball striking, second shot approach, and just taking some of these guys and seeing what we're doing with the course history with them.
Yeah, I think wedge play is going to be important because, of course, the courses are short. You're going to see a lot of shots from like 100 to 150 yards this week. So wedge play, I think, will be important. And if the wind does pick up, I bump up strokes gain around the green. You know, the greens of Pebble are going to be very, very small. If the wind picks up, there's going to be plenty of missed greens. So that's something else you could look at this week when you're looking at stats. Let's get to this week, the tiers. We got 10K. We got Berger all the way up to Mr. DJ. Who are you going with this week?
I think the DJ conversation is a bigger one out of the gate. Probably spend some time here and then go down. But I don't know. I don't know if you saw this today. I saw speculation that he could just withdraw everybody. There's a bunch of withdraws already that guys that, you know, pulled out. I wonder if him coming off of the win in Saudi and you know, getting ready for what's ahead, if he wants a week off. And that sort of scares me a little bit. But 12,000, and I think he's like 4-1, I saw Vegas odds. So
yeah, it's crazy, right?
What did you think about that first? That's where I want to go with DJ, and then we can talk about the range.
Yeah, 4-1 is wild. And here's a stat that I saw on Twitter at Will Haskett. He was talking about Dustin Johnson's results when playing the week immediately following a Middle East appearance. He was tied for 32nd last year when he went from Saudi to Pebble, tied for 45th the year before when he went from Saudi to Pebble, and he missed a cut a few years ago. He went from Abu Dhabi to Torrey Pines. It's not the greatest track record, but it's a smaller sample size. So, you know, I don't know really what to make of that, but it doesn't look good for him. I don't know. Here's the thing. If everyone's thinking this way and he does play and he's like 10% owned, I mean, I'm probably going to have to play him, right? I mean, like, you know, when you can get DJ at reduced ownership, I don't give a fuck if he played on Mars last week and he's coming to play. I mean, it's Dustin Johnson, you know, I mean, he can turn it on at any time. But if his ownership creeps up any more than that, I don't know if I'm going to play him this week. What about you?
I think he's over 20 no matter what.
Oh, you think so?
Say, dude, I think he gets owned. Yeah. Oh, just look at the odds, man. It's insane. People just love to plug that in and go from there. You know, it's not like there's a bunch of guys in the 6K range, but there's ways you can build it for sure. So I don't know. I feel like he's going to be extremely high owned regardless, and I'm likely to be there with him. The only thing I worry about a little bit is that if he just shows up to show up because he'd already made the commitment and just says whatever and, you know, packs in early. I don't know. He's normally not the kind of guy, though, and he's kind of on a mission right now. So that's where
I'm. You know, he's already done that once this season where he was supposed to play somewhere and didn't play. It wouldn't be the best look for him to do it again twice in a year where he's only played like 5 events, you know, image wise. So, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he does end up playing, but if he just doesn't give a fuck, I could definitely see that happening this week. It's just, I'm just taking guesses. We don't know. He can also go out and whoop the field by 10 strokes because it's fucking Dustin Johnson. He's been incredible every time he's stepped on a golf course for the past 6 to 8 months. I mean, I don't think he's finished worse than like fifth or some crazy amount like that with a bunch of wins out there. So like I said, if he doesn't garner ownership, I think I'm going to have to play him because it's just Dustin Johnson. But if he does, if he's over 15%, over 18%, something like that, I'd probably give it a fade.
I'll give you some other guys. Just last thought on that is too. It's almost like in football, we were talking about some football bets earlier, but you've got like these look ahead games and things like that, where guys are just worried about the next game. And then you see them have a letdown game. He's got the Genesis next week. So it's like, how much does he really care? I don't know. Like I said, I think he's a professional golfer. Of course, he wants to come out and win, but we've seen him take his 80-80s and 78 withdraws and stuff like that, where, you know, it has happened before this giant run that he's been on. And it's pretty nice. I bet you he made more in appearance fees this week than he did for winning the tournament, to be honest. So I'm sure he's just,
oh yeah,
you know,
he probably made like $4 or $5 million last week. Yeah, it's gonna,
that's
be
what
ridiculous.
I mean. So
yeah,
it's like, to me, it's like, I'm not saying he's gonna pack it in. It just, it literally does worry me enough where I'm like thinking about that way. And maybe that's wrong, but I do think about it a little bit that way. So besides him, I do like Cantlay and I do like Berger. I think Berger missing the cut is the more interesting one to me because it was kind of, he couldn't buy a putt all week. And it was, you know, not the worst week overall for him, but just because he was so heavily owned and lets everybody down in a spot that they thought he would come through at. And the two times he's played here in the last, you know, since 2015, fifth and 10th. So I think, you know, with him, his ball striking looks good. bring him out. If less people want to be on him, his price is 10-1. Like there's a few reasons, and maybe people go to Casey there because he just won in Europe a couple weeks ago. I don't know. I don't think he gets popular ever, but Cantlay is probably the one that most people go to. And I'm right there with you. Cantlay's just too good. He fits everything I talked about earlier with ball striking. You mentioned around the green stuff. He's actually been better in the recent rounds, 50 rounds. He's been better at that aspect of his game. So I think he fits extremely well regardless. So I'm going to be in on Cantlay and Berger for sure. And then we'll see about DJ.
Yeah, I'm going Cantlay as my first cash game cornerstone. And again, going 11,000 for cash game cornerstone. It's like, I've probably done that twice. I've been doing a little bit more here recently, just trying to switch things up because I have been struggling. But I mean, last week it worked out with Justin Thomas. I'm going with it again because, again, I just, let me name everything down. Dustin Johnson going from, you know, Saudi to Pebble, and you see his track record. Casey, 2 weeks in the Middle East, and then coming, you know, his body's got to be used to that type of time frame, and coming back to the West Coast. Berger, maybe, but he missed a cut last week. I do like Berger. We'll go over that in a second. Willie Z, his short iron game is probably the worst part of his approach game. That's the one thing I worry about. I think I'm still going to play him in GPPs. But again, I'm just going down this just to explain why I'm going with Cantlay. Spieth, good track record here, but you know, one round, I can't use him in cash. Jason Day hasn't been playing great. I can't use him in.
The rich and powerful want us to think the economy is a line on a stock market ticker. That's wrong. The economy is powered by us. It's what we create, what we buy, what we need. President Biden has proposed bold public investments in jobs and families, but more is needed. We need housing, healthcare, caregiving, action on the climate crisis, and millions of good-paying jobs. This is our moment to finally unlock prosperity for all of us. For more information, go to prosperus.org. That's prosperus.org.
Cash. Siwoo Kim, at this price, there's no way I can use him in cash. Moly, I thought about, but, you know, two events, that's it. I'm not that strong on using him in cash. If you have to go with a 9K, I'd probably go Moly. Fowler, no. Burns, no. Cameron Davis, maybe, but 9,000, the price is crazy for him, even though the guys are playing solid. So the only guy that I really trust in cash in this 9K and up range is Patrick Cantlay, and that's how I'm going to go with. Now, it makes it so I have to go deep into the 6K range, and I'm not really happy about that. But, I mean, I think I can make a logical guess and try and pick one of those guys and be okay with the other two guys that I have that I like really a lot in the 8K range, and we'll go over that. So Cantlay, first cash game cornerstone is going to be this week. For this week, I do like Berger a lot. I think for GPPs, I think that he can make a little bounce back after, you know, he missed a cut on the number. I think had some bad luck, you know, on that back nine this past week. So I could go back to Berger. And in all honesty, if you wanted to start with Berger and cash, I wouldn't hate that either. But I just trust Cantlay more, even though the $1,200 is a lot of difference. And it almost makes me second guess myself, but I'm going to go ahead and go Cantlay as my cash game cornerstone. And I do like Berger as well. Moving down to this 9K range, just sort of already went over it a little bit, but I really see the guys just burning out top 10s, top 20s. He actually cracked the top 50 in the world. He should be eligible for WGC events and the Masters. With that, if I am not mistaken, with a special temporary membership on the PGA Tour. I'm not 100% sure about that. Don't quote me. But, I mean, I think he's like 49th in the world now. So he should be able to get into those events now, which is big time. Free money, basically, is what it comes down to, especially for those WGC events. He's sort of borderline. I think I am going to play him because, again, like I said, his wedge game, especially his really short wedges, like from 100 to 125, by far the worst part of his game. We'll see how that goes. Maybe he plays smart, uses less the driver and gives himself something a little bit more than that, because I think most golfers will know their weakness, and that is his weakness. Spieth, with his track record, I'd probably go back. Maybe. I know I'm betting Spieth. I got him at 30-1, which I think is a pretty decent number, especially after what happened last week. So maybe it's going to be that type of hedge where I go and just bet Spieth, because it just depends on how popular he's going to get. I think he should be very popular. Do you think he could be possibly one of the higher owned golfers on the board, Tambo?
I don't know. I think it's the other way. I think, I could be way off here. I'm not the ownership guru, but I feel like everyone's going to say what we're going to say is that, you know, it's 1 week, it's one round. I hope he's back, but I'll just find another way to get access to it. I'm not going to play him, or I'm not going to chase that. I feel like more people are going to say that and play guys that I'll play, you know, Jason Day, Siwoo Kim, Molinari. Like, there's other guys in this range that you can play. So,
well, if that's the case, if that's the case, I'll probably go back to him. If you think if he's going to be under like 12-13%,
that's what we got to see, right? That's why it's so hard on a Monday like this with him and DJ, and just to get what the because it's all narratives that flips everything, right?
Yeah.
And some of the conversation that goes on after our podcast comes out, things like that. So I'll have to see later in the week, but I just think like, yeah, people will say that, but even like I was doing the round four showdown show at Roto Grinders. And if you looked at the Saturday numbers before he made that second bomb on 17, after he made the big one on 16, it was his approach game was on fire. Like it wasn't just the putter saving him. Like, so
he was now first in stroke scan approach going into the final round. I mean, he was sick.
Yeah. Three top tens and a win here, a bunch of top 20s. Like, this is a good spot for him. And he's coming in a good mental headspace. I don't know what that Sunday round does to him, but he was right there still, like you said, like one stroke back with five to go or something, and just got away a little bit. But that was after a horrible day. Like, that was like what Finau did last year almost. Like, it was just a rough Sunday, and then someone catches you, except in this case, guys passed him, and that's what happened. Same with Xander. Like, we talked about this already, but you get what I'm saying, where these guys just, it's one bad round. It's unfortunate the timing of it after having such a good round on Saturday for a guy like Spieth, but I just think people more often than not want to just say, look, now he's up to 10K almost, 9,700. It's 1 week. Let's just leave him alone and play some other guys. So for me, I'll wait and see. I like Willie Z a little bit. It's just that price is still up there. He's been a gamer, though. Like you said, it can't take that away from him. His ball striking's on point. I don't know. I wonder the conditions, the course, the strength. Like, that's sort of what I was going to talk about earlier when I mentioned the thing about like the U.S. Open, maybe a little bit harder pin placements. Was that when I said I forgot my thought? Was they might set it up a little bit differently without the amateurs, right? So you could get a different setup in that sense, and then three rounds on the harder course. So I wonder how that will affect certain guys. You know, Jason Day, someone I got interested in, talk about course history. He's another guy. So the worst part of his game last week was the putter, and that's and around the green and stuff, and that's sort of his bread and butter. So I'm going to go back to him. You know, again, kind of like my Brooks play last week. This is what I get a feel for with Jason Day. Just got to pay for it. It's 9,500, but I think this field is so weak, and there's a lot of question marks at the top, as we've hinted at already, right? You mentioned really Cantlay, sort of the only one you feel safe with. The other guys we don't even feel safe with Dustin Johnson.
And it's golf. So, is there really a safe? I mean, Cantlay could probably miss the cut now. That's just the way it is, right?
Yeah. And so what I was taking away from that, and I was going to tie it in with, you know, just the thought that I forgot earlier, was with the U.S. Open factor of not here, but just in general, when we talk about U.S. Opens and daily fantasy and playing PGA DFS within it, oftentimes, man, the balanced lineup is the one that does the best, because it's got, you can fit all these guys through the middle that you'll actually at least feel like we're about to get in this 8K range and finish out the nine. And there's a lot of names here I feel more comfortable with than I do these guys like at Spieth and up. So I think you can build a line starting with Jason Day and get a bunch of guys into it versus the 6K range is not that enticing just to make DJ work. And then what if DJ comes 10th place or 20th and fades away, right? A top five, he's probably up there no matter what, because he would have to score to get there, but or he could run away with it. It's Dustin Johnson. I'm just saying that's my thoughts. More balanced lineups if most people are going to go to the guys up top. That's sort of where I'm at here. Other guys, Molinari, you mentioned him. I like that. Ricky Fowler. Is he maybe this week's Spieth? He's the only guy we need to see bounce back from something, but I'm not sure if this is the place. I just think that it's a guy that could pull a Brooks or pull a Spieth and just come back and get his stuff together. He's sort of been trending in the wrong direction, missed the cut, but it's been his putter. Same like Jason Day. He's just not making any putts. And if that starts to happen for him, this would be the course. And then, if, you know, at the bottom, Davis, got to play Cam Davis, man, 9K or not. He just scores so well, even if it's not a high scoring event, as far as DraftKings points go. I like his chances. I like his swing. His ball striking is incredible. So I'm going to be on him still.
Yeah. You might've talked me into Jason Day over Willie Z this week. It could be a possibility. I like the way, I like what you said about him having his putter in his short game be the worst thing that happened last week. And, you know, it was just a few months ago where he was on a pretty good run. So I might have to add him and take away Willie Z. We'll have to see as the week progresses. Of course, you know, this is just our first look. We have our more detailed picks and all that stuff Wednesday on our respective websites. So make sure you go and check those out. I do like Francesco Molinari. I think he'll be very popular. Don't you? Don't you think he's going to be pretty highly owned? I suck at ownership. I rely on other people to give me that, especially on
a
Monday.
I do for sure as well. But I think that's what I was going to say. On a Monday, it's also so difficult to figure it out because, like I said, so many narratives come out and spin things. I think Molinari's picking up steam as we speak.
And he moved to California. Maybe he's used to POA now since he's living out there, and there's a bunch of POA, a bunch of POA courses out there. So maybe he's been practicing on them. Maybe he can get that putter going, but he's like almost dead last in the field in putting in the last 150 rounds. But we'll have to see how that goes. But in the game that he's been playing, it's been pretty solid here lately. And I do like Cam Davis, just like you. I'll probably go back to him. Ricky, I'm not sure. The thing about Ricky, you know, he was always a good ball striker, but, you know, putting was like one of his biggest strengths. You know, he was an aggressive putter, makes a lot of putts, and he's still aggressive, but now he's missing the ones that are coming back. You know, I mean, he always leaves himself 3 5-footers for par because he was so aggressive. You know, he never leaves putts short, and now he's just having struggles making those shorter ones also. And it's really been affecting his game. And of course he's been having the big number a lot recently. Yeah. And you know, there are opportunities to get very large numbers here, especially if the wind picks up with, you know, Pebble Beach hugging the coastline. You could see some balls go into that ravine down there called the Pacific Ocean. So I'm not really sure if I'm back on Ricky this week, but let's go to this 8K range. I'll go ahead and start. I got two of my other cash game cornerstones in this 8K range. It's going to be Kevin Streelman at 8,900, you know, a really good approach play, top 20 in this field in the last 50 rounds, you know, above average with his short wedges, really good on short par fours. There's a bunch of par fours from like 400 to 450 yards. He's 16th in the field in the last 50 rounds. So Kevin Streelman's going to be my second cash game cornerstone, and my third cash game cornerstone is going to be Matt Jones. This is, you know, if you look at his long-term stats, they're not as great, but if you look recently in his last 12 rounds, the guy's been striping the ball pretty, pretty well. He's made a whole bunch of cuts in a row. He's actually 7th in the field in strokes gained approach in the last 12 rounds, 1st in strokes gained par 5 in the last 12 rounds in this field. He's been putting out of his mind as well. Everything's sort of coming into place for him. I'm a little bit worried about his shorter irons, but, you know, you're going to have to take some risks this week. This is by far the weakest field that we've had this season. So, you know, you're going to have to look over some stuff and pick some guys just based on feel and looking over stats. And his course history here is great as well. So I like Matt Jones as my third cash game cornerstone. I'm probably going to go back to Homa. You know, his putting, he couldn't hit a damn thing with his putter, but the ball striking has been really, really good. His iron game has been really, really strong. He's been making a ton of birdies. He's been crushing the par fives. He's been really, really good with his wedges and short irons here lately. So I like Max Homa. Who do you like in this range?
I was going to ask if you like Phil. This is the course that Phil shows up at, right? If you know, Jason Day's got the history we talked about earlier, but Phil, third, first, second, 16th.
You know, the one thing I'll say about Phil is I think the lack of a pro-am might actually hurt him because I feel like, you know, that's his like zone, you know, talking shit, like side money bets with like, you know, guys, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like with like amateurs out there where you can know you can take their money and stuff like that. Like for a lot of people I know playing these 6 hour rounds, the AMs, they're looking forward to like not doing that. I think Phil is the opposite. I think he's the one that wants to play with these AMs, have a little fun out there and not be all about business. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's done so well at this event over the years. Total narrative. You know, but I mean, like, I'm thinking that that could be one because if you look at his numbers recently, he's ranked 135th in my model, 109th in the last 12 rounds, 134th in my model, 109th in approach, 106th in putting, 135th in tee to green, 99th in DraftKings points, 113th in birdies or better gain, 125th in strokes gained par 5, 132nd in par 4 efficiency from 400 to 450 yards, 112th from proximity from 100 to 125 yards, and 105th, this is the one that's really shocking, 105th in strokes gained around the green. He is not playing well. So, I mean, I think if it was the pro-am, I might take a shot of him, but I don't think I'm going to play him this week.
Well, it's just a question, Kenny. Jeez, just had to ask, man. You take it that level? Jeez. Phil's makes sense. I get where you're coming from, though. I think that's a good point. He likes hustling, so he's out there trying to grind those rounds and make some money. But I got six guys, I guess, in here just looking over it. I had some time there with Streelman. I'm with you for sure. I've just been playing some great golf, the stats, the history, everything you talked about there. The other two guys I like are right below him. Homa, 14th and 10th here the last 2 years, has been playing really good golf lately. And he even tweeted it out after the round, like, man, I just got to fix one thing, basically, he said. He's going to come back and do it again this week. So he knows what it is. He knows what he has to work on. And I just like his upside always. He's under 9K. And then what about Norlander going back to the well here? Because, you know, I think too with Reed just winning, remember he went to school with Reed. Maybe he gets a little fired up and comes out and shows us something here. I know he's been trying his hardest, 22nd, second and 12th in the last three. There's got to be some motivation there for that. So I think, and just the ball striking has been incredible. So I normally don't like playing him, but I kind of like the fact of, you know, where it's going to be, if it's going to be like a 13 or a 15 under type of event where it gets won at instead of minus 19 or something and minus 20 in the past. I think that's where I kind of like him. Tringali's just been too good. I guess the thing about Tringali that I've noticed is, you know, the history and whatnot. Not that I'm a big course history buff, but it hasn't really mattered. He's almost like one of these guys that's turned it around. And so now these finishes of like 17, 18, you know, all these ones that he's been putting up, thirds, these are more what he's accustomed to now. His stats are incredible. I'm not going to name them all across the board like you did with Phil, but just like seventh birdies are better, 11th approach, 13th DK scoring, 10th bogey avoidance. Like everything does line up. I think top 15 in greens of regulation, which is important here. So all of that to say, you know, I think he's a pretty good play at 8,500. And then the two or three at the bottom that I like is Harmon and Neesmith. I don't mind your Matt Jones call. Maybe I could add a seventh in there, but I do like Harmon just for the facts of what he can do, right? Doesn't have great history here or anything like that. I don't care about that, but he's been playing pretty decent golf. He's making cuts. He's got upside. Again, maybe a higher scoring event could help him a little bit, but he doesn't blow up and make those mistakes. So back to your Ricky piece earlier, it kind of made me think about it. I've already bet him, but just to chime in real quick was, the short putts are going to be huge here because, like you mentioned, that around the green game just becomes so important with a little bit smaller greens, where if he's not making the shorties, that's a problem, and there is opportunities to blow up. Well, Harmon is the opposite. Harmon really doesn't ever blow up, and he can make the short putts. So I think that makes him a good play down here. And then I said, I like your Matt Jones call, but Neesmith, just tracking him last week and following along what he'd been doing, he actually has an 11th place here last year. And stats-wise, he's awesome. And last week, he was really on with his ball striking. He's, again, look across the board at his stats. Good drives, bogey avoidance, ball striking in general. Greens and reg, fifth in this field in the last 50 rounds. So I really like Neesmith and just sticking with him. And maybe the 8K price tag scares people away because they're used to seeing him in 7 or 6K range.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I can get behind the Tringali and the Naismith place down there. So I do agree with that. Let's move down to the 7K range. Go ahead, Tim. Why don't you keep going?
Yeah, this range is packed, man. So without naming them all, just even in the upper range, like Chris Kirk, Russell Knox, these are guys that I would like to play that I'm going to be a little bit heavier on, I think, than some of the other names below them. Varner was looking okay last week. I'll go back to Harold Varner. I think he's a good play. Roy Sabatini, I like a lot, you know, at 7,600. And then the other guy I like down here is actually Scott Stallings, just to round it out at 7,500. Not someone that, you know, people are normally tracking or onto, but he's got good course history. He missed the cut last year. Before that, he was 3rd, 7th, and 14th. And then if you look at his numbers from last week, just the ball striking numbers, they're all solid across the board. He just really couldn't get it done down the stretch, but I played him a lot in Sunday round 4 showdown because all three rounds he had it put together going into round 4. And so not a bad week overall. I like rounding it out with him at 7,500, but who do you got in this upper 7K range and that you like? Any cash game cornerstones in here?
No cash. I think if I'm going to play somebody in cash up here, it'll probably be Malnati. Pretty decent track record here. He's been playing good golf except for that one missed cut that he had. Of course, I had him at his cash game cornerstone that week, so that one hurt a little bit. Still bitter. But good wedge play, good on short par fours. Has been having a ton of birdies. He's fifth in the field in birdies a better game in the last 50 rounds. Malnati is. So I like Malnati. I like your Knox call. Really good with his shorter irons. So I'll probably play a little bit of Knox. I don't know if I want to be using him in cash, though. I like Varner as well. Showed a little bit last week. His game looked pretty good, of course. Really, really solid iron player. He's top 5 in this field in strokes gained approach. Top 3 in strokes gained tee to green in the last 50 rounds. So I'll go a little bit Varner going down a little bit. I'll probably go back to Sabatini. If you look at his, I think he shot like 6 over on Thursday and he finished at 1 under. So he shot 7. He shot like a 64 on Friday. He still missed the cut by a couple, But I mean, that was a huge round. And prior to that, I think he was like top 10 or something the week before. He's been playing good golf. I don't think people are going to be on him. So I like Sabatini down here, going down a little bit more. I'll play a little bit of Andrew Putnam. I mean, and Putnam went 72 holes without a bogey or a double or a triple. He went 72 holes, 16 birdies, I think, and like, 56 pars at the Waste Management. And Waste Management is a tough course to go bogey-free at. It's not easy. And he went bogey-free every freaking day. I don't mind him. I also like him 140-1. I mean, a guy who goes, you know, bogey-free, I mean, he has won before. So I don't mind him down there, going down a little bit lower. I might play a little bit of Harry Higgs. He's got a decent finish here last year. Scott Percy, another guy with good course history down here. Brian Stewart, a short golf course specialist. You know, I like him. I might even give Ryan Moore a little bit of a chance because he's been struggling. But his short irons are the best part of his game. Maybe once he gets to a course that is really, really short, that he can maybe get his thing going after a really poor start to this season. So those are some of the guys I like down below.
Yeah, if I go down below there, one that stood out was Kyle Stanley, just for the numbers and what he's been doing lately. So his stats line up, 36, 18, 32nd coming in, so 7,400. He's a decent price. Joel Damon at the same price, got a 14th here last year, made the cut all three times. He's not playing his best golf right now, but again, if you look at the stats, they still line up for the course and quite well across the board, to be honest. So I like him. Who else? I got Ryan Moore, who you just mentioned. Again, stats line up. I played him at 6,700. He's gone back up a little bit, but I'm going to keep going. I like these types of, like him, Sabatini, Knox. These are the grinders that I think are going to set up well for the course this week. So that's why I'm going with them. And at least in my early look, I'm interested more in that than some of these scores, not necessarily going to be as high on them. Michael Thompson, you mentioned him a couple times over the last little bit. He hasn't been doing much, like he just missed the cut, but then before that it was a 5th, 25th, and 21st. He's got a 10th here 2 years ago, so stats wise if you look across the board, he's not going to pop off the page. But if you think about the model, you know, like if you're not looking at a model and you just think about what he's been doing, I think that's, you know, where you can find some of these unique plays in tournaments. So he's one that stood out to me. I wasn't sure if you were going to bring him up or not. And then Scott Piercy, you mentioned, definitely like him at an event like this. 18th, 10th, 20th, 55th here. Scott Parsi, sometimes we call him because that's all he does. But those are Parsi's good score here, likely this week. I don't think it's going to be, like I said, it's not going to be 20 under or something that takes this thing down, in my opinion. So he can still score enough, by all means, to win a tournament at something like 15 under. So I think I like him. And then that's really it for me, man. And then it gets, you know, quite a drop off after that. So there's not really anybody else here I'm super high on. Anybody else you got in the 7K range or want to hop into the sixes?
Let's go ahead in the 6K range and go with my last cash game, Cornerstone. I mean, if I'm going to use Cantlay up top at 11,300, I got to pick someone down here in the 6,000 range. And the pickings are slim. This is by far the weakest field that we've seen. But you got to take risks sometimes, and this is the risk I'm going to take. And I'm going to go ahead and take Joseph Bramlett at 6,700 to finish off my cash game, Cornerstones. 18th a couple weeks ago, 18th last year here. That's about it. So I'm just going to go ahead and take that with him. So I'm going to go ahead and use Bramlett. So my cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Patrick Cantlay at 11,300, Kevin Streelman at 8,900, Matt Jones at 8,100, and Joseph Bramlett at 6,700. It leaves exactly $15,000 to finish out the rest of your lineup. So it's still plenty of money to go ahead and do your thing. Other guys that I'm thinking of using down here, man, I'm not even really sure. Maybe a little bit of Denny. Oh, CT Pan is one guy, another short course guy that likes these short courses. I'll go ahead and play just a little bit of him down here. Maybe a little Josh Teeter, really good with his shorter irons once again. His approach game's not bad. He does make a lot of birdies, and he really crushes par fives. So I'll play a little bit Teeter at 6,600. Christopher Ventura, it's all about the putter for him, but we've seen it happen time and time again with these good putters getting hot. He's really good on par fives. He makes a ton of birdies. Top 15 in both DraftKings points and birdies better gained in the last 50 rounds in this field. So I'll go ahead and play a little bit of him. Going down a little bit, I might throw in a little bit of Ash K. Bhatia at 6,500. We'll see if the young kid can go out there and play, get his game up, try and get that, you know, that rep up of being one of the top really young players out there. Other than that, there's not many. I mean, you know, who do you like? Maybe you can convince me into some of these guys down here.
No, it's really hard, man. There's almost nobody that I like, to be honest. Like I said, I just hate this range. I don't think you have to go here this week. So just to name some names, you know, I'm with you on Denny anytime he's under 7K. We talk about Patrick Rogers in the same instance where, you know, under 7K, not on Bermuda. Sounds like a good spot to pick him up at 6,900 if you want to take a shot.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, I like that one. I guess that'd be the one I like. But, you know, there's CT Pan, your call there. I don't hate that. Fairways and greens. So to play that game, it can work out well. So, you know, smaller greens, things like that you mentioned. So I think a guy like him would be okay. You mentioned Bramlett. Who else? Davis Riley's back in the field. Didn't put on the worst display, so you could go back to him. I don't see why you wouldn't. It wasn't, you know, like he played terrible. He just didn't have the best overall week, but that's what you get for $6,100. It was definitely a decent week, and maybe this is better for him. Christopher Ventura, who you mentioned. Aaron Baddeley, Adam Shank. These are guys we play sometimes. And just scrolling the list, man, there's not many beyond that. There's a lot of names down here, but you know, it's not something that I'm going to be looking to build my lineups around. So I'm not going to just give out names to give out names. That's just some of the ones that I would go to if I was doing, you know, when I'm doing a bunch of lineups, I might go that route, but I'm mostly going to be going balanced from what I can tell as of now.
Yeah. I might throw in a little bit of Rob Oppenheim, you know, really good wedge player, really good around the green. That's someone who I could think of playing. Yeah. I mean, it's getting sort of tough down here. And I'm sure once I dig a little deeper as the week goes on, I'll be able to find probably a couple of more guys down here. I want to play Jimmy Walker, but I'm not. The guy has been playing so bad. But you know, normally he's really good on power and he's really good with his wedges. But I mean, I don't think he's finished better than like 45th in his last like 20 starts or something like that. So I can't really get down with him. Even though the numbers say it's possible, I'm always a Dominic Bazzelli mark. I always like him. I don't know why. I'm just a fan of him. I just like the way he putts and, like, you know, and again, his wedge game is decent. So I might throw him down at the minimum. These guys are throwing out. I'm sure I'll have more as the week goes on.
Yeah, I think it matters too, like the weather and factors that are going to come into it. Because like I said, if it is going to just be more of a grinders fest, a lot of the guys I like to, like, we joke all the time about Bazzelli, the B stands for birdies. That's why we play him. But if it's not going to be a spot where we're used to with a bunch of birdies out there for the taking, then I don't think he's going to be a great play.
Yeah, it's going to be based on the weather. You know, I mean, the thing is, if it's light winds, this could be a birdie fest. There's no doubt. The course is small. These guys are just going to, you know, throw darts out there with their wedges if there's no wind. But it's pretty likely there's going to be wind. I mean, it's Monday. I don't judge the weather this early in the week anymore. I don't even think about it until Wednesday night because I don't make my lineups anymore until Wednesday night. I used to make them throughout the week, but now I don't do that anymore. I make them like 11 o'clock on Wednesdays. Now it'll be like 8 o'clock on Wednesdays because I got to get up at like 4 a.m. because of this new job. So that's the way it's just going to have to be when it comes this week. All right, let's get to the bets. Tamba, who do you got this week?
I mentioned earlier, Jason Day, 25-1. Going to run that back. I feel like this is like how I felt about Brooks. So it feels good. It's not as big of a number, obviously, but I'll take it. I like Streelman, who you mentioned, so I'd already bet him 40-1. This week, my book has each way. They brought it from 1/4 payout on top 5 to 1/5 payout on top 8. Yeah. But I got Streelman 40-1 each way with the top 8. All these are that. Fowler 50, same thing. Norlander 55, missed that number. I wanted a little more, but I'll take that. And then Stallings 100.
All right, I got 4 this week so far. I'm sure I'll add some. You know, in my final write-up, I'll also probably do some top 20s and some top 40s before, and then I'll look for some live betting as well. But I mean, my first bet's going to be Spieth at 30-1. I was a little bit shocked that I could still get 30-1 on Spieth on a course like this after the week he just had. So I'm just going to go ahead and pounce on that. I also have Molinari 30-1. I don't mind that number. I'm going to go ahead and take him as well. I got Matt Jones at 80-1. And I got Putnam as just a flyer at 140-1. Definitely going to add a couple more as the week goes on, as I do a little bit more research before my final write-up on Wednesday. All right, one and done. Who you got?
I haven't fully decided. I put down Cantlay and Day for now. I might just burn them up and give them a shot that way. But I definitely don't want to use DJ here. I think there is other spots I can use them. So I'm gonna burn up somebody, probably Cantlay or Day. I don't feel like there's gonna be another spot for them that I need them, and it's still early to make some moves. So that's what I got.
Yeah,
what
you got? you might have taught me in the day. I think I'm going Spieth or Day this week. That's what I'm going to go with. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Spieth. I'd rather get him after a week that he just had, because who knows what the hell is going to happen with him. I mean, we can't really predict the future. He could just go off and become the Spieth of old, or he could just shit the bed again. So I'll go ahead and just use him right after the week he had, because, you know, he has those feel goods inside of him. So Spieth or Day, I'm leaning Spieth, and that's how it goes. Of course, I had Xander again last week, finishing second. So that wasn't the worst week in the world for a one and done. I had him and Willie Z in both of them. So we'll see how it goes this week. All right. So you can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. I know this was a little bit not as exciting as the last couple of weeks' pods, but man, I am just fucking burnt out. My head is fucking killing me from this work. So we'll be back next, and the Super Bowl the day before. So next week will be a little bit more exciting, I'm sure. And then we'll go ahead, and you can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. You can find me my article every week, on gupscorner.com. Make sure you go. I have some promo codes out, so you can go ahead and check my Twitter feed for that if you want to join up. It's a good spot to get all the stuff you need for golf and other sports. Tambo.
All right, find me on Twitter at Totec and Tambo, or head on over to rotogrinders.com/DJ and get yourself $10 off the first month. Do the Tuesday show there with Noto and Cards. That's a great one for anybody playing large field GPP stuff. Wednesday, I do the Lineup HQ show. If you want to know how to put it all together, exposures, groups, settings, all that stuff where you're putting it together and build out. A lot of people say they take a lot away from that. And then, yeah, NFL's over. Like you said, Kenny, a little bit of a hangover Sunday into the Monday. So it was a rough one, I think. But overall, still some good information out there, and you guys can find us throughout the week.
Definitely sounds good. All right, so no amateurs this week. It's going to make this a little bit better, I think. So let's go ahead and let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.
The rich and powerful want us to think the economy is a line on a stock market ticker. That's wrong. The economy is powered by us. It's what we create, what we buy, what we need. President Biden has proposed bold public investments in jobs and families, but more is needed. We need housing, healthcare, caregiving, action on the climate crisis, and millions of good-paying jobs. This is our moment to finally unlock prosperity for all of us. For more information, go to prosperus.org. That's prosperus.org. The rich and powerful want us to think the economy is a line on a stock market ticker. That's wrong. The economy is powered by us. It's what we create, what we buy, what we need. President Biden has proposed bold public investments in jobs and families, but more is needed. We need housing, healthcare, caregiving, action on the climate crisis, and millions of good-paying jobs. This is our moment to finally unlock prosperity for all of us. For more information, go to prosperus.org. That's prosperus.org.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.